Hey everybody, welcome back to the Viral Music Hub podcast. I'm your host Lawrence, and we're back with the Fleetwood Mac history series. We're on part two, and the first part we left off on was that Fleetwood had just released their first two albums, their self-titled debut and Mr. Wonderful, and they had just recruited Christine Perfect as their keyboardist. Now, after the release of Mr. Wonderful, Fleetwood Mac had discovered this South London blues trio called Boiler House, and it consisted of bassist Trevor Stevens, drummer Dave Terry, and most importantly, 18-year-old guitarist Danny Kerwin. So Green and Mick Fleetwood knew Boiler House, and they saw him rehearse in a basement boiler room. And Peter Green was so impressed that they wanted him to play support slots for them on their little tour. And they wanted them to be a little more professional. I think they saw more in Boiler House than Boiler House saw in Boiler House, to be Frank. So Peter Green really, really respected Danny's guitarist abilities, clearly, and he really wanted to find him another rhythm section. He tried to get people to apply, and they tried to get people to rehearse for it. Peter Green was just a tough critic, and he didn't think anybody was good enough for Danny. So he said, screw it, come join Fleetwood Mac, Danny. So that is when Peter and Mick invite Danny Kerwin to be the third guitarist in Fleetwood Mac, along with Jeremy Spencer and obviously Peter Green. So now we have Peter Green bringing in an 18-year-old Danny Kerwin. Isn't that incredible? I mean, Danny is like probably fresh out of high school, you know, or and this is like unbelievable. It's like opportunity for him. Going from like a basement blues trio to Fleetwood Mac, it's a pretty big jump. Peter Green clearly saw a lot in Danny from the very beginning. He saw a lot more creative ability and talent ability in Danny Kerwin than Jeremy Spencer ever had. And this is what I was alluding to before about Jeremy Spencer. He was beginning to get really lazy. He wasn't contributing much anymore to songwriting. And he just really wasn't doing a whole lot. He would play the slide guitar on certain songs, but that was really more the extent of it at this point. You know, Danny really started taking more of the writing chops from this point forward, along with Peter, obviously. So then we get to about the end of 1968, and they release another one of their most incredible singles ever, called Albatross, which is a complete instrumental blues song. Peter Green and Danny Kerwin trade off guitar on this song, and my goodness, this song is such a exhibit of how well Peter Green and Danny Kerwin's guitar styles just fit so perfectly together. They played off of each other so well. Danny had that more of that like folky, like melodic type of playing, where Peter had that just bluesy, mysterious, like hard rock, you know, feel, but they bounced off each other perfectly, and they harmonized perfectly together. This is one of the most incredible blues instrumentals you'll ever listen to. Albatross, it's a must listen for anyone that loves music. it's one of my favorite songs ever. It always makes me feel so like at ease when I listen to it. It just elicits a really special emotion I feel when you listen to this song. It's just amazing what these guys tell just through guitar instrumentals. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing when music can do that for you with even out even lyrics. It's incredible. But anyway, the band finishes up with the Blue Horizon label that they're on with a live album in Chicago in 1969. They started exploring more label options as Danny Kirwan helped evolve their sound. Believe it or not, it's something I didn't know before I did some of this research. The Beatles actually tried recruiting Fleetwood Mac to Apple Music on their, which is the label they were on, but the band manager for Fleetwood and occasional songwriting contributor Clifford Davis decided to go to Frank Sinatra's label Reprise, which was an interesting choice in the long run, but you know, that's where they went. They ended up releasing two compilations in 1969, The Pious Bird of Good Omen and English Rose, which was basically the American version of The Pious Bird of Good Omen. This was a thing back in the late 60s. There was even in like the mid 60s, late 60s, a lot of these British bands, even like this happened with the Beatles sometimes, there would be like a British release and then America would get like a slightly different version of the release. And they did this with some of the Fleetwood releases as well, including The Pious Bird of Good Omen. So it got released here as English Rose, and there was like a slightly different track listing. I think it's not like incredibly different, but it's different enough. But the main thing is this compilation features both Black Magic Woman and Albatross, which is really the most important, the important parts of this compilation. So then, next I want to talk about one of the biggest singles that Fleetwood has ever made in their career. And then again, a song that has left an impact on a lot of artists, and a lot of artists have done covers of, and that would be Oh Well. They release it in September of 1969. You know, it's funny because I'm talking about Oh Well right now, and it comes out actually after their third album comes out, which I'm going to be talking about in a little bit, and it actually never made it on said album. It was only released as a single at that point, which was really strange, but this is what happened. And so Oh Well comes out, and man, so Oh Well is actually a two-part song technically, because the single is an A-side, Oh Well Part 1, and then the B-side, Oh Well Part 2. So the first part is this unbelievably hard-hitting blues riff that Peter had come up with that is one of the more iconic hard rock guitar riffs that I think you'll ever hear. And a reason why you see so many people to this day cover it. Actually, it's funny because I believe Chris Stapleton just did a cover of Oh Well with, I'm sorry, I'm just going to look this up really quick. It's going to bother me because I just saw it. Slash. I don't know how I could forget Slash. That's pretty embarrassing. But anyway, yeah. So just as recently of, you know, like a few days ago, you know, as of April 2024, you know, Chris Stapleton and Slash are doing a version of Oh Well, a song that was released in 1969. That's how long this song has lived in people in rock and roll, you know, and it has staying power. That's how iconic this riff, how iconic this song is. Also, another great version of Oh Well was done by the Rockets. Definitely check it out. It's a really cool version as well. But anyway, just back to the song itself. So yeah, that first part, man, it's just a blitz of a freaking blues attack by Peter Green. It's just in your face, doesn't let up for a second. But then part two is very, so part one's the part that most people cover anyway, and that's about it. And it's really short. It's about 2 minutes long. It's nothing too long. But then part two is a drastically different shift. I mean, it is a drastically different shift. It turns into this folky Spanish guitar from Peter. He literally did this on a this part of the song on a Ramirez Spanish guitar, and he actually wanted this part, this really melodic Spanish guitar part with some Fleetwood had a cowbell percussion, and then there was like a little recorder, and cello, piano by Jeremy Spencer. It's just a really neat, like, I don't know how, I describe it. It almost feels like I'm in medieval times when I listen to this song. It's got that feel of almost like a lute, the way he plays the Spanish style acoustic. It's just so astounding. It's honestly amazing, and I really wish people would listen to Oh Well Part 2 more than Oh Well Part 1 sometimes, because I as iconic as Oh Well Part 1 is, and it's like it's one of my favorite, blues songs of all time. I think Oh Well Part 2 is just as good, but in a totally different way, and I think it just completes to be this whole unbelievable journey listening to both parts together. I cannot recommend listening to this enough. You can find it on Spotify. You'll find both parts on Spotify. It's or wherever you should be able to find it. But yeah, Oh Well is one of their iconic songs. And Danny again plays a little bit on this. It's not as much of him on this. He does join in on the first part for a little bit, but this is mostly Peter's show on this song, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful piece of blues, man. It's incredible. So then we lead to the album, the third album release, Then Play On, in the same month as they release Oh Well, September 69. Now, man, Then Play On is, Peter Green and Danny's best work together. Danny Kirwan and Peter Green's only album together, I should say, unfortunately. We're going to get into that and why that happens, but Jeremy Spencer is almost not even involved at this point. Like I said, his creative influence has just drastically dropped. He's basically playing piano almost at this point. They've almost gotten away from the slide guitar for the most part at this point. It's not a big part of their identity any longer. So Jeremy's just really just not useful really at this point creatively for them. He's just barely a background session player at this point. It's kind of sad, but it is what it is, it's how it played out. But this is just an incredible album. The two singles that were released during this time were Rattlesnake Shake, that was on the album, and Oh Well, which wasn't on the album, go figure. But the album sees a huge step in musical evolution, as Peter really allows Danny Kirwan more songs to call his own and sing and feature on more. And they fuse together Peter's blues sound with Danny's melodic, beautiful playing, like I said, and it just produces this really cool, unique, creatively flowing album that's just can be a little all over the place, psychedelic, bluesy, but folky, and it's such an adventure. It's so cool. There's multiple instrumentals on this, which I always found really neat. I think there's like, let's see, if you want to count, so there's some the bonus tracks on the 2013 re-release of Then Play On were the two parts of Oh Well, The Green Man Alishi, which is another amazing song that I'm going to get into in a little bit. This is one of their best. That's going to be one of their best songs they've ever made too. And I won't talk about that probably until the third part, just because that's right around when Peter's exit is. But that is on the re-release of Then Play On. Sorry for the tangent there, but that, and then the last one that's the bonus track on there is World in Harmony. So World in Harmony, OL Part 2, My Dream, Searching for Madge, Underway, and Fighting for Madge are all instrumentals on this. So there's a good amount of instrumental work on this. So I get it if some people aren't into a lot of instrumentals, they might not love this as much, but I think it's just, it's the beautiful the way they interwove those instrumentals within the album. I think it just, it's really brilliant because it's kind of like a cool album because it's like, it hits you hard with the song Coming Your Way that Danny Kirwan opens up with and wrote and sings. And it's actually a kind of a hard hitting, like melodic bluesy song for him. And then, but then it goes to Closing My Eyes, which is like a very like mellow melodic blues song by Peter. And so you kind of go from the attack to the, and then you flow down to like the mellow, and then they go back up with Mick Fleetwood's instrumental he wrote, Fighting for Madge. And it's just, that's just another incredible guitar performance by Peter Green on that. And then it goes back down to the mellow with Danny Kirwan's When You Say, which is a beautiful, almost like folk sounding song. It's really incredible. And then again, it goes back up with Peter Green's Showbiz Blues. It's like a, it's just such an adventure up and down this track list. Almost everybody's involved on this. Even John McVie writes the Searching for Madge instrumental too. So in the Danny Green and Peter Green, I mean Danny Kirwan and Peter Green are splitting up the tracks here. Let's see, between the two of them here, I'm just gonna count the original track listing here. Peter had 1, 2, 3, 4 five songs written. Danny had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 songs, which I thought was really cool. That they were both just working in such incredible creative tandem with each other. And it's a shame we didn't get to see more of their creativeness together, because they had something really amazing forming together on this album. And unfortunately, for a lot of reasons, this begins to fall apart. And I'm going to start to get into that right now. But we're going to go to this incident in 1970 in Munich. So at this point, Peter Green, Danny, Jeremy, Spencer, they're starting to use LSD a little too much. No one in the group was innocent of it, but those three were really starting to get a little out of control. Eventually, they went to Munich for to play some shows. They were invited to a commune at a mansion in the countryside by two strange men at the airport, and they alleged the pair were Rainer Langens and Uschi Obermeier. It becomes clear the psychedelics the band were given by these people were tainted, and the band ends up having horrible, horrible episodes, especially Peter, who was found playing horrible, nonsensical sounding music and claimed it was like the most spiritual stuff he's ever written. It's really scary what bad psychedelics can do. It's just something, I think everybody's got to be really, really careful about. And Peter Green reportedly already probably had some pre-existing mental issues like schizophrenia. And I think everybody kind of feels that this incident just kind of brought out the worst of it. And Peter, Danny, and Spencer, they were never quite the same mentally after this. Peter Green started wearing Buddhist robes, and then he claimed he no longer wanted to make money from music. This stuns John and Mick. It's an absolute blow to them, because I don't think they ever saw this coming. The rapid decline of their bandmates' health and mental well-being like this. And now Peter doesn't really want to make money from music anymore and is thinking about selling his belongings. This is going to start a very, very sad chain of tragedy and flux within the band in the next few years. I'm going to get into more of this on part 3 of the Fleetwood Mac History Podcast. Thank you for listening again, guys. Tune in for the next episode soon.